Hey everybody, J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another Baseball America Prospect podcast. We have, I am just back from Florida. Jeff is still there. We have been scrounging the backfields, bouncing around all over the state. And we saw a lot of breakouts. We've seen a lot of backfield action. And we want to talk about it today. We're going to keep this one pretty tight. Jeff is just done with his second game of the day. And we're recording this. I got to work this up. Pretty quick turnaround here. So nice tight one today. But Jeff, you know, it was great to see you in person down there, and great to see you on the pod here. And let's just roll into it, which is what we were going to do today, is just talk about some of the guys who we saw that kind of stood out. It's not going to be comprehensive. Please don't, you know, we love your comments, but you don't need to send a comment going, I don't know why you didn't talk about so-and-so. We're not covering everybody. We can't. We're going to hit some guys, though, who've stood out to us. And I'm just going to kick it right to you and start with a guy who both of us saw. And both of us kind of brought up to each other as someone who really did stand out, which we're really digging deep here. This is a deep sleeper. This is the number one pick in the 2025 draft, Eli Willits. So we're not going massively, off the board here, but both of us saw Eli Willits, and I'll let you start. What really stood out to you about Willits?
Yeah, and let me begin by saying that this is typically a profile that I'm a little more skeptical of how it's going to translate. It is polished skills. What I mean by that is bat to ball ability, the ability to adjust to a bunch of different pitches, the ability to identify pitches. He has good hands and actions in the field. He's got internal clock, all the baseball skill stuff, right? He doesn't have the loudest tools. You know, he's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy.
He's definitely not the biggest guy.
Yeah, there isn't like outlier bat speed. That said, he's not as small as maybe you think. Maybe he's 5'10". He's added some muscle. He's gotten a little thicker. Like, I wouldn't say that he's skinny. Not out of shape, but like strong. There's he just adjusts the barrel really well. Like, I have little question that he's going to hit. I have little question that he's going to be a valuable infielder. I think I personally, based on like four looks now, I think he can stick at shortstop. I think the arm is strong enough. I think his release is quick. I think it's smooth there. You know, it's not like it's ever effort, or maybe he's not the rangiest guy, but it's not, at least at this point, he gets to mostly everything. And, you know, it's probably 12 or 13 home run power there. You know, I saw a double the other day. I saw him hit another ball hard to the wall today. It's not as if he's absent of power. He could get to like 50 power, maybe 45 power, and be a really good player. But I said it to you today, and I think, you know, you watched the WBC. That was how this trip started for me. And two games of Team USA, I thought the guy that impressed me the most, just from like a winning baseball player standpoint, to talk very cliche, was like Bryce Turang. And he had a phenomenal year this year. I was 4 WAR or something like that, maybe more. I think Willits is that style of player. And if he's got a better shot to stick at shortstop than Turang does, and can be an average or above average defender there, do all the things that he does well, and he's a switch hitter, I think that is just a really valuable player to have kind of plugged in at the one or two spot in your lineup, playing short for you every day, kind of setting the tone. And it's really professional at bats for how young he is. I think that's because, like, you expect a young guy like this, especially somebody who reclassed, because really he should have been in this draft class that we're working on now in 2026. You expect a guy that's that young, just from high school in general, to be a little overwhelmed, right? And he's not overwhelmed. And you know, in the backfield, you could face a AAA arm, you could face a guy that was in the DSL last week, and you could face an MLB arm. No matter who they roll out there, he can hit everything.
Breakout game. He led off the game for the Nats. Liam Doyle, who's premium first round pick, was a little wild that day. Was not the best look at Liam Doyle, but twice in that, twice in two innings, because Liam Doyle exited the game in the first. They put in a reliever, and then he re-entered the game in the second, and then Liam Doyle has exited the game again in the second. He didn't make it through an inning. But Willits twice worked deep counts, drew walks. Did not look over odd at all, did not look over match, stole a base against them. Just looked like he very much belonged, very much did not, like you said, did not look out of place in any way in a game where he was playing against a lot of older players. I kind of echo what you saw, you know, say like I only saw him for one game. I was supposed to see another Nats game, but, you know, we had some rain, another Nats A-ball game, I should say. But he just looked like a hitter. And that's a profile. If you told me that he's going to end up being the best player to come out of the 2025 draft, I would find that highly unlikely. I would think that there's going to be someone who ends up having a higher upside, ends up having bigger peak years. But if you told me that Eli Wiltz just ends up being a very productive player for a long time, I absolutely agree with you on that. Before we move on to other teams, I think we both saw Gavin Fien, speaking of Nats and 2025 draftees and all that. And I will say, like, Fien is not the defender he's already playing. You know, he was deferring, understandably, to Willits at shortstop. But there's more thump there. There's more size there. As a hitter, he really stood out to me as someone who, again, looked very advanced for his age, considering, you know, that he was a 2025 high school draftee as well. What did you see?
Yeah, I didn't see Fien in the field. He's DH'd in every look that I've had on the backfield. So that's 3 games now. He might have been in. No, I think he was DH in the first game too. But yesterday they played 10, then he DH'd. He got hit in the hand. He tripped. He got tripped up at first base. He got hit in the foot. He had a bad luck yesterday. He had a barrel in the first at bat. It's just a really clean swing. Another guy where there's more power there. He's more physical. You know, it's almost like a Brady House kind of a build. He's a big guy. I don't know where he ends up defensively. I wondered if they would play him in the outfield today. They didn't. They've been playing a few different guys over there.
I saw Fien at DH too. There must be something going on defensively right now.
Yeah, I think there's some questions with maybe the defense, but the bat is not a question. He's physical. I think he's going to hit for power. I think he's going to hit for average. The approach is really good. He's not chasing. Having the two of those guys back to back, so they had Willits hitting first in the low A lineup, and then they had Fien hitting second. And having those guys back to back, I mean, no matter who the pitchers were, really had to work. You know, it was between the two of them, probably 8 to 12 pitches minimum that a pitcher had to throw. And, you know, Fien's a guy that has the ability to obviously leave the field. And I think you kind of see that there's contact, there's power, there's angles. There's a reason that analysts liked him as much as they did. And I think all that stuff, when you watch him, is pretty present. I don't have any questions about Fien being able to hit. It's just, if he's a DH, he's really going to have to hit. But, you know, I think some of it was also like the team he was playing with. Like, they had Ronnie Cruz in the infield. They gave a few different guys reps at third base, including like Coy James and Ramirez Jr. and a few other guys. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I assume he's going to play some in the field once the season gets going, but maybe they're hiding him. I don't know. I don't want to speculate because I haven't heard that, you know, confirmed. I'll also say one other name that stood out for me the last few days, 3 days that I saw Nats in the backfield. It was before spring breakout and then two after, was Ronnie Cruz. He had a homer today, has made some hard contact. He's pretty twitchy. Came over from the Cubs last year in one of those deals, and he's looked pretty good. You know, I don't know where he ranks right now in the national system. Probably a top 10-ish kind of player in most systems, though, and can play a little bit a little bit at second base. So I thought he was another interesting name that popped that I hadn't mentioned, but smaller, kind of twitchier guy. I thought the angles were kind of bad, but then today he busted off and turned on 95.
So the name, though, I think that we have to talk about, I didn't get to see, you got to see, but I will tell you, I remember where I was in our Slack channel when you and Ian were saying, hey, Anthony Ianson just touched 100. Now, to lay it out, I'll let Jeff talk about Ianson much more than me, but just to lay it out, Anthony Ianson sat 93 miles an hour at LSU last year. He maxed out at 97. So in the span of one offseason, we have taken Anthony Ianson, the really polished, successful pitcher who really knows how to pitch, who was effectively one of the best number two starters in any college team last year, because that was LSU. And now he's turned into, I mean, like, I saw Liam Doyle, and again, Liam Doyle's, you know, throws hard, but Liam Doyle sat 96, touched 97. As you know, again, he's a lefty, but you know, that was the Liam Doyle experience. If you'd have told me at this time last year, oh yeah, Anthony Einson and Liam Doyle are both going to start, both going to pitch in breakout games, and Einson's going to throw significantly harder than Doyle, I never would have imagined it. What was that like, and what does this mean?
Well, I think, you know, we knew we had some feeling, because Ian, obviously, with the Sox prospect stuff, does a ton of great work down there. Josh was down there and saw him and already got video, and he was upper 90s then, right? We knew that the velocity had jumped. But a velocity jump and sitting 100 miles an hour essentially are two different things. I mean, he hit 100, I think, three times, and there were a bunch of 99.7s, 99.8. He had a 99.9. I'm not sure that he threw a fastball softer than his hardest fastball at LSU last year. I don't think he did. And it was a short inning. Like, I think he saw three or four batters and just like cleared through them. You know, the off speed looked good. Breaking ball looked good. And everything, because of his arm slot, it honestly looks like it's coming out of his neck. Like, the angle too, and the way that he gets down the mound, that it's almost like this high speed catapult. It's just a totally different look than, you know. So they had it was Bennett, lefty, tons of extension, weird look, to Valera, who's got like a lower slot in the right hand side, who also hits 100 miles an hour, to Witherspoon, who's a little bit more over the top, maybe more like a traditional three quarters. And then they went to Marcus Phillips, who's like a power sidearmer. And then they went to Einson. I don't know how the Orioles won this game and hit. It was kind of a lot of like infield single stuff like that. But the pitching that they, I think that was the story of like spring breakout for me, was that game. The pitching on both sides was really good. Trey Gibson started. The Orioles did this three inning thing with Gibson, Herman, and then Dorza. All of them looked as good as I've seen them look. I've seen Herman in person now three times, and he's never been as good as like the data or some of the video looks. That looked as good as the data in the video. It was a great night of pitching. That was my best spring breakout game this year. And I've gotten some memorable ones with big names. I got the Anthony home run last year and all that pitching that was in that game against the Rays. I got the Paul Skeens, Jackson Holliday kick off a spring breakout, you know, the first one that they did. Mm-hmm. To me, for what I do and the things that I enjoy, this was my favorite spring breakout game I've ever gone to, was that Red Sox Orioles game. There were some good bats there and all that sort of stuff on both sides. The lineups were good. Ike Irish looked really, really good, actually. But the pitching on both ends was good and exciting, and it was first looks on a lot of guys, you know, since they've been pros. Dwarza's velocity was up as well. Like I said, Herman looked good. Gibson looked like the guy that's going to pitch in the big leagues this year. And then you got to see all the Red Sox draft guys. So, and Jake Bennett and what they've done with him in the offseason. So I just think, like, from what our perspective of like what we do, I love that game. I had a blast. I had a blast cutting up the video. You saw me later that day. I mean, we were in great spirits.
Yeah, and mine was not bad either, although it wasn't, I don't think, as good as yours, but it was Seth Fernandez throwing 102. It was, getting to see Bryce Rainer, who I still want to dig a little deeper on, but not loving what the swing looks like right now, but obviously he's coming back from a significant shoulder injury. It was getting to see Tony Blanco Jr. hitting a home run and really enjoying it as he rounded the bases. And that is the Tony Blanco Jr. experience. You want to see him hit a ball really far. Unfortunately, I was on the side getting video, so I didn't get to track it, didn't get to enjoy the majesty of it. But if that was your best breakout game, Braves Yankees, the worst breakout game you've ever been to?
That was pretty bad. I feel like I got a really bad breakout game last year. No, I don't think I did, because I thought about it, and that Braves team did start J.R. Ritchie and a few other arms, and then that was against McGonagall and Clark. So that wasn't bad. Yeah, I think from a talent perspective, this is probably
no one threw a ball like that. In most breakout games, we're like, these are the guys who threw 100. These are the guys who threw 99. These are the guys who threw. Anthony Einstein, by the way, 97.8 was his slowest fastball of the game. That's also
harder than his hardest fastball last year. It's crazy.
And that is also harder than any fastball that we saw in that Yankees Braves game, because no one touched 97.0, which is hard to do in a breakout game now.
The Yankees kind of rolled out. I mean, they pitched Kyle Carr for a bunch of innings. Like, they really rolled out like a backfield game pitching staff, right? Like, that's kind of how it felt. The Braves rolled a couple of decent arms. Like, you know, they started with Murphy, and I thought Murphy looked fine. The vertical break on that was cool to see on Hawkeye systems, that it still was crazy as it is on minor league data. I thought that was interesting. Bauman, who I wrote up as a secondary honorable mention pitcher of the day, he pitched really, really well. I think he struck out 6 or 7 over a few innings. Munoz came out. The Braves side of it was better than the Yankee side of it. The Yankee side of it, they were no real prospects. I mean, unless you're into like Jay Savina or Cor Jackson, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, George Lombard Jr. You'd have him, but that was.
Oh, yeah. No, excuse me. But Lombard Jr. was swinging from his shoes. It was a very unmemorable showing from Lombard Jr. Him and Justin Gonzalez were probably two of the, I mean, it's a single game, so whatever, but they were probably two of the bigger breakout busts or breakout struggle bust guys. You know, Lombard was fine. Struggled with a couple plays in the field, funny enough, which we know, like, that's not who Lombard is. And then at the plate, there were a ton of whiffs. I bet he had 6, 7 whiffs. I mean, he was trying to catch one. Like, he was hoping to have his moment. You know, he wanted to have his round the bases for the Yankees in the spring breakout game as the leadoff hitter and, you know, future Yankee shortstop George Lombard. That's what it looked like. So yeah, he was in that lineup. Excuse me. There was one prospect,
but there was a Braves hitting prospect that actually stood out to you. We're going to get to him right after this quick break.
This is it, Kratz. Opening weekend of the season, and if you're looking for tickets for an MLB game and they're either sold out or you're just a little bit lost and you need some help, SeatGeek is there for you. It's not just a spot where you buy the tickets. It's where you feel good about buying the tickets because they have your back with their features.
And you know you're going to get a good price. That's the deal that everybody's looking for. But especially early in the season up here in the Northeast, you kind of want to go to a day game where you're still going to be in the sun. It might shift during the summer, but hey, you know what? SeatGeek will let you know exactly where you're sitting and if it's a good spot to watch the game.
That's right. Each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. So look for the green dots. Green means good. Red means bad. And of course, we have a code for you. You can use code TERRITORY10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code TERRITORY10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later.
And we're back. So what did John Gill show you?
More bat speed than I expected. Really good quality at bats. He's super twitchy and kind of bouncy and plays with a certain like exuberance that I think brings some energy to the game. Wasn't bad in the field. Had a couple of really hard hit balls. Hit a homer. I mean, it was a wall scraper. It was like a 99 mile per hour EV that just got over the wall, you know, like 365 feet. But he's not the biggest guy. The angles seem like they're decent. It's there's a little bit of the, he's a right-handed hitter, but like there's a little bit of the Kevin McGonigal starter pack there, just in terms of like an undersized guy with a lot of personality. I don't think he's as good as McGonigal, but
Jeff Pons says John Gill is Kevin McGonigal. That's why, you know, that's our promo.
I mean, but it's like I try to think about players in like terms of archetypes and buckets. Yeah. Like, what's the bucket? And then like there's certain guys in certain levels. So like if Kevin McGonigal is level 5 of that, then he's like a level 3. But it's good. There's a lot of traits to like. I certainly came away from that game being like, this guy is more of a top 100 prospect than I thought coming in. That he wasn't a guy that I anticipated to be like, oh, this guy's going to be top 100. And I kind of left thinking like, the next time we're talking about the top 100 list, like he's somebody I'll bring up in conversation, even if it's not someone that's likely to get added to the list. I think he should be like in that 15 to 20 group that we put outside of it, because it was a pretty good showing. And, you know, I had a couple other people there with me, and I think we all came away being like, hey, John Gill's a pretty good player, you know.
Another guy we both got to see, although I think you've seen him a little bit more than I do, was Fenwick Trimble. What stood out to you about Fenwick Trimble?
So I actually got Trimble on the backfields today against Kyle Leahy from the Cardinals, who's a solid major league pitcher. I mean, he's got over 100 innings with a sub 4 ERA. So it's, you know, he's had some success. Doubled to the wall in right center. First at bat of the game, next at bat of the game. I think the third pitch, he just absolutely crushed it pull side, just eviscerated the ball. And, you know, it was an easy one. The backfields with the Marlins, they have the reggae horn going. The reggae horn's blaring. Like they must have hit the button 15 times. I was like right next to the speaker trying to shoot video, and it literally like moved me. Like I jumped, you know. But he looked pretty good. So a couple of hard, you know, some hard contact there. I've always liked the player. I think I had him as like a breakout guy this year on my breakout team. Thought he had a good year last year. And there's supporting skills. He can run a little bit, he can play a little bit in the outfield. So I think he's a guy that could potentially be like a sneaky everyday player, maybe even for the Marlins, maybe not this year, but possibly late in the year, starting next year. I think he's somebody that's very much in the mix for them.
One other that I wanted to bring up from that, again, there was a couple of players that really stood out in that Cardinals Nationals game, but Tanner Franklin, which I know you do the Cardinals, but Tanner Franklin showed the ability to get swings and misses top of the zone up to, I can't say 100, but if you want to be precise about 99.9, I think it flashed up 100 on the board, but you know, showed real velocity, showed, I think he got 6 swings and misses on his fastball, which, you know, in a pretty limited, you know, sized look, kind of mixed in a cutter as well. But like, he was someone else that for me kind of jumped out as someone that I'll be looking forward to watching a lot more now that the season is right around the corner. And Jeff, we're so close to you and I, one of our favorite things. We love going to games in person, but man, I don't think there's anyone out there who enjoys kind of bouncing around MILB TV as much as we do. And that's coming.
Yes. Soon. Yeah. I can't wait. I was talking about that today in the backfields. We're like, this is my biggest concentration of in-person games until probably about July, where I'm heading out to Cape Cod League more often. You know, I think at that point I start to maybe see some different players come through New Hampshire and Worcester. Worcester's easy for me because it's right near the house, but you know, with Ian, you know, working with us now and he's in the area, it's like it might save me some trips from time to time. He might be battling me for certain players. So I'm more than happy with the kids the age that they are right now to just sit at home, set up the battle station, take in 7, 8, 9 games in a day, go through the schedule, look at who's starting, knowing what pitchers are going, who's getting scratched. And I felt like last year doing that really allowed me to have like a much better perspective of like the global, you know, what's going on from day to day. Because there's so much that happens that if you're not keeping kind of meticulous track of it, you might there might be a couple things that slip through the cracks, a couple injuries, guys getting scratched, that sort of thing. And it allows you just to get into the feedback loop a little quicker, texting around, asking around to folks in the game of, hey, what's going on with this guy? Is he hurt? What happened? And then, you know, usually can get to the bottom of it. We can react to that. So and I just enjoy it. Enjoy watching a lot of MLB TV and, you know, seeing 9 games a night, you know.
I keep thinking of our guys I want to mention just quickly at least, because Juan Sanchez with the Blue Jays is another one that I don't want to bring him up. One, because he looked good. But two, yeah. I really wanted to see him in person and like put eyes on him. And the lower half was a little thinner than I was fearing, is the way I would say it. You know?
Yeah. I thought physically looked pretty good.
Physically looked pretty good. Like I will say this, like looking at him and JoJo Parker also in that same game, I didn't feel like physically, now Sanchez is bigger, much bigger, but Parker didn't look like a much more athletic player than Sanchez.
No, he's a little bit more stout. I mean, to me, JoJo Parker looks like, all right, you're going to move this guy to third base. The arm's good. He's going to play third base for 15 years. He's going to have some 25 to 30 home run seasons, and he's going to hit for good average and get on base. That's a real bat.
That was going to be a fault.
I came away more positive. So I was talking about the Astros, you know, and off air, and how, you know, there's a bunch of players here. I'm getting second looks tomorrow, and I'm looking, you know, for some positive growth there from the system, just because it's always been kind of down as long as I've had it. And I'm waiting for them finally to pop. The Blue Jays look like they're popping again, this time on the position side after popping on the position, in the pitching side last year, and they still have a fair amount of pitching talent. I don't know about Arjun Namala. Like, he's probably going to get leaped by Sanchez, you know. I think, you know, Parker's probably, you know, the guy that they've been kind of waiting on, that big bat in the minors that can be like a top 25 type of prospect. I think because he homered the next morning on the backfields too. So, I mean, he's just been finding barrels. It's a really easy swing. Yeah.
He looked good. When we saw him.
Yeah. And I heard from somebody that tonight that they actually had Sanchez above Josuar as their top player in the DSL last year. So, you know, there are some folks that are very positive on him. And after seeing him, I almost wonder if I was a little light on him, frankly.
But, well, that's a little taste of what was going around. I will probably try to do another one of these next week. Bring on Josh and Jesus, who've been doing the Arizona trip as well. Josh did it all. He did Florida as well. But I'm going to let Jeff run so he can get a little more work done and get some sleep. And I'm going to try to get this worked up and get some sleep myself. So that is another Baseball America Prospect podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please like and subscribe on the YouTube channel or the podcast feed. And do check out at baseballamerica.com all the content that we're producing over there. This week, we've had a staff draft. We have had a update of the draft rankings to 300 with reports on 300 players now. A lot of movement within the rankings. We also updated our high school and college list with that for 2026. And we're going to have a ton of stuff now getting you ready for the minor league season as well. Got a top 100 update coming around the corner as well. So for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.